Chapter 14. One thing I have to say for Wellard and his stormtroopers, they were as fast and stealthy as I could have wished for. Jürgen and I had to work hard at keeping up with them, even though they advanced as cautiously as though the enemy were already in plain sight. Two or three of them covered the tunnel ahead, while the others darted forward to conceal themselves in crevices or patches of shadow before taking up the duties of guardians themselves to allow their comrades to move forward in their turn. They did all of this with an eerie precision, apparently unhindered by the bulk of the melter bombs they carried, communicating only by hand signals and eschewing the use of the comm beads, for which I was grateful, starting in dread at every superfluous sound which might call attention to us. But as we hurried on, following the route which had etched itself indelibly on the synapses responsible for my ability to navigate underground, we saw none of the signs I so dreaded. No gleam of metal in the darkness ahead, no green charnel glow forewarning us of the presence of death incarnate. We advanced in semi-darkness, our luminators shrouded, so that the dazzling highlights which had been struck from the ice surrounding us on my previous trip into the depths were almost entirely absent. Now, instead of the refulgent background glow I'd grown used to, the walls threw back no more than a slick, almost organic-looking sheen, as though we were passing down the gullet of some warp-spawned leviathan. The thought was hardly a comforting one, and I shuddered from more than the cold. At length we reached the dead-end passage where Penlan had fallen, revealing the existence of the amble tunnels below the mine, and we paused to regroup. "This is it," I warned everyone. "From now on, our chances of meeting a Necron are greatly increased." What I meant was practically inevitable, but I shied away from pronouncing those words, not out of deference to the feelings of Wellard and his men, who I had no doubt would have responded with the same lack of emotion that they had displayed thus far, but because I didn't want to face that thought myself. Wellard waggled his cheroot, which had by now acquired a thin scum of frost over the tightly packed tabac leaves it was composed of, and which crunched irritatingly between his teeth as he spoke. "We'll be ready for them." He gestured with his left hand. "Haster." One of the troopers stepped forward to cover the hole with his hellgun, while the rest rappelled down into the darkness with display team precision. I heard a couple of clicks in my combead, almost as if it were picking up some stray interference from somewhere, but which I knew was the signal from the advance party confirming that it was all clear down there, and the sergeant grinned at me. For the first time, it struck me that he was actually enjoying this. "Coming?" he asked, and disappeared down the hole after his men. Why, I simply didn't shake my head and run for the surface, intent only on making it to the next shuttle out, I'll never know. There was still my fraudulent reputation to consider, of course, double-edged weapon though that had become in the last few years, dragging me into these ghastly situations almost as readily as I was able to turn it to my advantage. But even now, I found myself reluctant to surrender it. And it couldn't be denied that my chances of survival would be marginally better with a screen of stormtroopers between me and the Necrons instead of wandering around these catacombs alone. I glanced round the narrow chamber, steeling myself, and met Jürgen's eyes. The sight of him was instantly reassuring, despite his usual unprepossessing appearance, a visible and olfactory reminder of all the perils we'd faced and bested together. He grinned at me and hefted the bulk of his melter.
"After you, sir," he said. "I'll watch your back."
A task, I have to say, which he performed admirably throughout our years of service together. I forced a smile to my face. "I don't doubt it," I said. Then, before I could change my mind, I seized the line and slithered down into the bowels of hell. I landed heavily, but retained my footing and was able to step aside as Jürgen lurched down the rope behind me. The stormtroopers looked mildly disdainful at our performance, the awkwardness of which was underlined a moment later by Haster's descent, which he managed with the dexterity of an acrobat. "Where to?" Wellard asked. "This way." I indicated the right direction and waited while the stormtroopers went through the gap first, falling into place behind them. With every step we took, the knot in my stomach wound itself tighter, the memory of where we were going insinuating itself into my forebrain, inextricably intertwined with images of the massacre I'd witnessed on Interitas Prime. This would be different, I kept telling myself. I wasn't fleeing in panic through an unknown labyrinth this time. I was heading for a known location, which, by the Emperor's grace, I had already entered before and escaped to tell the tale. Castine was right. The Necrons would be concerned entirely with the Greenskins. They didn't even know we were here.
Found something,
the pointman said, snapping me out of my reverie and back to the claustrophobic confines of the Amble Run. We closed up, the faint light from our shrouded luminators glinting from some detritus on the tunnel floor.
What do you make of that, sir?
Jürgen asked, his feeble beam picking out something only he had noticed. Apart from myself, he was the only one of our party who had walked these narrow tunnels before and would be able to notice any changes. The hairs on the back of my neck rose, something that happens in popular fiction far more often than it does in real life, and which I can assure you is a remarkably uncomfortable sensation. My aide was shining his illuminator down a narrow cylinder punched into the ice lining the tunnel, about the width of my forearm and deep beyond the strength of the lamp he carried to pick out the end.
They've been here, I murmured.
The only possible explanation was a stray Gauss flare shot striking the tunnel wall. I looked about us, finding several more of the sinister indentations.
Then who were they shooting at?
Jürgen asked. That was a good question. If the orcs had made it this far into the tunnels, our job was about to get a great deal more complicated. I moved up to join Wellard and the point man, who was staring in perplexity at a small mound of metal objects embedded in ice, ominously streaked with red.
What do you think these are, sir?
He asked, the air of unassailable confidence taking a dent for the first time since I'd met him. I looked at the assemblage of tubes and wires for a moment, then the bile rose into my throat as I realised what I was looking at.
They're augmetics, I said, swallowing heavily. They've been ripped out of someone.
So that was where Ernulf had disappeared to. These might not be his remains, of course, but it was carrots to credit he'd led whatever foolhardy expedition this pathetic revenant had been a part of. I wondered vaguely if we'd find traces of any other victims, or if they'd all simply been vaporized. One thing was certain, though. Thanks to these idiots, the Necrons would know there were humans on Simia Orichalcae now, and were most likely waiting in ambush ahead of us. This was just getting better and better. Well, there was no point in standing around worrying about it. Time was most definitely of the essence here, so I got everyone moving again and dropped back to walk beside Jürgen.
Be ready, I warned him. Things could be about to get...
I was interrupted by the dying shriek of our point man as he flared and dwindled to nothing in the necrotic glow of one of those hellish Gauss weapons, and then the metallic warriors whose appearance I'd so dreaded were upon us.
Place your shots, Wellard said calmly,
and the surviving stormtroopers unleashed a hail of Helgen fire against our attackers. The glare of the lasbolts impacting on the leading Necron dazzled my eyes, then its chest gave way, seared and blasted by the precision volley, and it tumbled to the ice-slick floor, revealing a fresh target behind it, already levelling another Gauss flare. Credit where it's due, Wellard and his men certainly knew their stuff. As I mentioned before, the Amble tunnels were narrow, forcing the hideous automata to come at us almost in single file, but the stormtroopers' discipline was excellent, and with the death of our first casualty, they dropped into a practice routine, the men at the front falling prone, those behind kneeling, and the ones at the rear standing up, so that the whole squad was able to concentrate their fire as one. The second Necron lost its head, quite literally, and fell heavily across the first with a sound not unlike someone kicking a bin full of scrap metal. As I watched it fall, I realised with a thrill of horror that the first metallic warrior we'd all thought destroyed was rising slowly to its feet again.
Jürgen!
I called, and my aide stepped forward, levelling the melter. The stormtroopers slipped easily out of his way, keeping up a barrage of Helgen fire to cover him while he aimed, and shielding their eyes as he squeezed the trigger. The flare of actinic energy stabbed my retina, even through my closed eyelids, and the roar of ice flashing instantly into steam echoed all around us. The air against my face was suddenly warm and wet, as though I'd been teleported into a rainforest somewhere. As I blinked, my vision clear, I could see nothing but puddles of molten metal surrounded by grotesque lumps of statuary, some of which still twitched, freezing almost at once into the rapidly reforming ice. Then, in an instant, they faded away as though they'd never been, leaving behind nothing but drifting vapour and some oddly shaped indentations in the tunnel floor.
Clear!
Haster called, taking the place of the disintegrated point man and leading us on into the darkness. Wellard nodded at Jürgen, an almost imperceptible tilt of the head as he passed my aide, the closest, I suppose, he could come to expressing thanks to an outsider, and jogged along in the wake of his men.
I couldn't help contrasting the reaction of Griffin's team to the loss of Lunt with the stormtroopers' matter-of-fact dismissal of the loss of one of their own, and mentioned as much to the sergeant. "The mission comes first," he said, his face hard, and that's all he would say on the subject. I wasn't exactly in the mood for idle conversation either, so I let it drop and resumed straining my ears for the slightest sound which might indicate the approach of more of those monstrous guardians. Luck or the Emperor must have been with us, though, as all too soon I beheld the baleful glow which forewarned us that we were about to reach our goal. We flattened ourselves against the ice-covered bedrock of the tunnel wall as we approached the entrance to that mighty cavern, through which I'd escaped only a few hours before, and strained our senses for any sign that we had been discovered. All seemed quiet, except for that damnable humming and the artillery barrage pounding of my heart, so we crept out into the chamber I'd so fervently hoped never to see again. My scalp crawled with apprehension, and I had to exert every micron of self-control I possessed to appear calm in front of Willard and his men. They kept their weapons trained on every patch of cover, every green-tinged shadow in the lee of those towering and incomprehensible mechanisms. If they were at all disconcerted by the sheer sense of wrongness surrounding them, they gave no sign of it. "Which way?" the sergeant asked, and I indicated the direction of the portal. He nodded. "Move out." We scurried through that vast space as Jürgen and I had mere hours before, still sticking to the shadows of the towering machines, that ghastly charnel light bathing everything in a sheen of putrescence. Some of them were marked with the peculiar stick-and-circle hieroglyphics I'd seen on Interitus Prime, and you can be sure the memories the sight of them stirred up did little to calm my fears. By this time my nerves were stretched tighter than harp strings, and it was probably this sense of heightened paranoia which let me hear an almost inaudible sound, a faint scraping which reminded me of scuttling vermin. I signalled the sergeant. 5 metres, 2 o'clock. Behind that, whatever the hell it is. Willard nodded, and gestured a couple of troopers to flank the gleaming tangle of green glowing pipes. The rest of us closed up, ready to face whatever the threat was, and I drew my las pistol and chainsword. Not that I expected the latter to be much good against metal rather than flesh, but it had served me well on many occasions before now, and the weight of it felt comfortable in my hand. "Contact, no threat," said one of the stormtroopers. His voice slightly attenuated in my combead and fell silent again. I hurried forward to join them, cursing their taciturnity. "Explain," I said, equally terse and afraid of transmitting for long enough to be triangulated on. If the trooper was surprised, he gave no sign of it. "It's a cogboy," he explained flatly. "Not just any cogboy, of course. The Emperor has more of a sense of humour than that. Even before I joined them, I had a sense of foreboding, which was amply justified as I looked down at the quivering bundle trying to wedge itself under the largest pipe. Logash," I said. The young tech priest must have recognised my voice, because he turned and looked up at me. Though his metal eyes made any expression hard to read, a sense of recognition began to surface through the expression of stark terror suffusing his face. "Commissar Kane!" His voice trembled, wavering in pitch like a boy in early adolescence. If he wasn't bonkers before, I thought, he certainly was now.
"You were right. You were right. We were unworthy to trespass on the sacred mysteries of the Omnissiah.
Where are the others?" I interrupted, squatting down to his level and keeping my voice calm. I haven't had that much experience with madmen, give or take the odd chaos cultist, but I've seen enough cases of combat fatigue, and his symptoms seemed similar. Overwhelmed by the horrors he'd witnessed, he'd simply retreated inside himself. "Where's Magos Ernulf?"
"Dead," he moaned, his blank eyes roving aimlessly. "Struck down by the Guardians for our hubris. We should have listened to you. We should have listened."
Resisting the temptation to say "told you so," albeit with some difficulty, I raised him to his feet as gently as I could manage, which wasn't very, to be honest. He was all but catatonic, but I succeeded in the end. "You're bringing him with us?" Willard asked, in tones which left me in no doubt what he thought of that idea. I nodded. "We can't just leave him here," I said. The sergeant looked dubious, and for a moment I wavered, thinking our mission here was hanging by a thread as it was, and adding a babbling lunatic to our number wasn't likely to help any. Then again, Logash had been down here longer than any of us, and might have information which could save our lives, or at least help us blow up the portal. As so often in my life, it was an almost impossible decision to make, and one which no one else could. But that's why I get to wear the fancy cap. I pulled on the tech priest's arm, reminded of Griffin's attempt to snap Margot out of her stupor not far from this very spot. "We have to go," I said. To my relief, Logash nodded and fell into step beside Jürgen and myself. "I take it Ernolf asked you to guide him down here," I asked, and the tech priest nodded. "I remembered the way. The Omnisire guided..."
"Yes, quite," I interrupted.
"Then what happened?" His face twisted. "We entered the temple, and the guardians fell upon us. Some were cut down where they stood, in the very act of making obeisance to the machine god, while others fled. But the guardians pursued them without mercy." That explained the remains we'd found in the tunnel anyway. A few of them must have made it that far out here before they were cornered. Logash turned a pinched, anguished face to me.
"They were swift and terrible," he whispered, "and shrouded in horror."
Well, that sounded pretty much like every form of Necron I'd ever encountered, and I dismissed his words as a figure of speech at the time, although I was soon to discover how right he was. "Contact," Haster said, and opened fire. The other stormtroopers followed suit, and I dived for cover, dragging Logash into the shadows with me. A moment later, an acrid odour of unwashed socks indicated that Jürgen had joined us. I levelled my las pistol, seeking a target, and was gratified to see that the stormtroopers were doing sterling work in engaging the advancing party of metallic warriors. They were the skin hunters we'd seen before, or identical copies of them, advancing with terrifying speed, their long blades whispering through the air as they swept back and forth. Instead of orc hides, though, the leading ranks were swathed in human skins, still wet and leaking. Thin runnels of blood turned black by the corpse light, which illuminated everything here, veining the metal torsos beneath. As I tracked the leading one, placing a las bolt squarely in the centre of its forehead, I realised with a shudder that the obscene covering it wore still had the vestige of a face. A face, moreover, which I recognised. "Ernolf," I whispered, revulsion twisting my stomach. As the creature inside his skin staggered backwards, I made sure of it with a flurry of follow-up shots, then turned my attention to the monstrosity behind it. The Magos had been a pompous fool, it was true, but no one deserved a fate like that. "They're behind us," Haster warned, before his voice rose in a throat-rending scream. I turned just in time to see him borne down by one of the razor-wielding automata, eviscerated in seconds, his blood left streaming down the sides of the bulky metal cabinet from behind which, a heartbeat before, he had been pouring Helgen fire into the main body of our vile assailants. A moment later, the flayed one rose from a crouch, the still wet skin of the deceased stormtrooper clinging to its metal torso by the stickiness of its own blood. "Frack this," I shouted. "Jürgen!" On cue, my aide unleashed another blast from his melter into the centre of the group, cutting a swathe through them as efficiently as before. Once again, the Necrons, caught by the full force of the blast, were simply annihilated, flashing into vapour as thoroughly as the victims of their own terrible weapons, while the ones at the fringe of that ravening burst of energy staggered, limbs and torsos seared and softened like candle wax. For a moment, I expected them to rally, restoring themselves in that unnerving fashion I'd seen before, but the survivors simply vanished into thin air. For some reason, Haster's body went with them, but why they would want it was a mystery I was sure I would never want to know the answer to.
1. Presumably for the same reason their harvester fleets abduct the populations of isolated colony worlds, whatever that is.
"How far to the objective?" Willard asked, as the surviving stormtroopers regrouped. Beyond a single glance at the coating of blood on the metal surfaces marking the spot where Haster had died, he seemed utterly unperturbed by the terrible fate which had befallen his comrade, and the rest seemed equally focused on the outcome of our mission, scanning the halls around us for any sign of renewed Necron activity. I was grateful for their vigilance, but I was beginning to find their complete lack of emotion somewhat unnerving. "About 300 meters, I said, forcing my mind back to the issue at hand. Willard nodded and waved to his remaining squadmates to move out. Jürgen and I fell in behind them as before, although I was now acutely aware that an attack could come from any direction, and you can be sure that I scanned our surroundings with even more diligence than before. I got Logash moving again with a relatively light tug on the arm, and he trotted along with us, apparently perfectly happy to follow whatever orders I gave now I'd been proven to be right about the inadvisability of being here in the first place. After a few moments, I caught sight of a bright glow from beyond the concealing bulk of one of those vast machines and indicated it to the sergeant. "That's it," I said, watching it pulse like the beating of a diseased heart and fighting down the surge of dread which suddenly suffused me. The portal. The glow intensified for a moment, with an accompanying thundercrack of displaced air which rumbled and echoed through that city-sized cavern as though presaging a tropical downpour. And it's active. I tried not to think about how many reinforcements had suddenly arrived. Rather too many, judging by the amount of air that had been elbowed out of their way as they materialised. "Not for long," Wellard said, his confidence apparently undiminished by the loss of a third of his squad already. "Movement," one of the troopers cut in, as blandly unemotional as before. 11 o'clock, 30 metres. We turned to face this new threat, the quartet of stormtroopers raising their hellguns while Jürgen lifted the Melter into a firing position. Logash was trembling violently.
"Omnisire, protect thy circuits," he mumbled. "Let this unworthy relay speed the electrons of thy great computation, preserving us from burnout," and other tech priest gibberish.
I glanced back at the stormtroopers and was astonished to see them quivering almost as badly. "Emperor, be with us," the closest was muttering under his breath. "Protect us with the shield of thy will." Something was seriously wrong, I thought. After everything they'd already shrugged off, it was hard to credit that they would be spooked so badly by a single group of warriors who barely outnumbered us. But Willard's jaw was clenched, bisecting the cheroot, most of which had fallen unnoticed to the floor. The hellgun jittered in his hands, wavering almost too wildly to aim, and he was muttering too, one of the catechisms of command which had evidently been drummed into him by the scholar tutors, and rather more effectively than it had been with me, judging by his demeanour up to this point. He began firing wildly at the approaching warriors, and as if that were a signal, the others opened up too, badly aimed las bolts detonating all around the Necrons with barely a single hit scored, almost as inaccurate as orcs. There was something about these warriors which was different from the others we'd seen, a more resolute, self-aware quality which sent shudders down my spine as I took in more of the details of their appearance. Less skeletal than the others, they seemed composed of ceramics as much as metal, and with writhing pipes and cables corded around their metallic bones, which flexed like living muscles as they moved. Thin tendrils of despair seemed to wrap themselves around my very soul as they approached us, bringing not mere death, but annihilation in their wake. Fear, I was used to, could master and control at least to some extent, but this was different. A primal terror which rose up from somewhere deep within me and threatened to swamp my very sense of self. Levelling my las pistol in my hand and ironically grateful for the augmetics which steadied my grip in spite of the treachery of my own body, I fired at the leading one, gouging a neat crater in the centre of its forehead.
"The horror! The horror!"
Logash was going fetal on me again, clinging to my ankles, and the stormtroopers were breaking, fleeing in all directions with cries of terror.
"The horror returns!"
"Jürgen, get him off me," I yelled, restraining from following only by the dead weight of the gibbering tech priest. I fought against that rush of primal emotion, feeling my very sense of self under threat in a way I hadn't experienced since the Slaaneshi witch tried to sacrifice my soul to her perverted deity on Slorkenberg over a decade before, and shooting entirely by instinct now. The green lance of a Gauss flayer beam missed me by a couple of centimetres and punched a neat hole through the smooth-sided cabinet beside me. I shot back, taking my assailant in the chest and making it stagger for a moment before resuming its unhurried advance. "Come along, sir." My aide was at my side now, prizing Logash's fingers away from my boot, which wasn't easy given that they were closed by a rictus of terror and augmetic into the bargain. The pressure against my soul eased abruptly, as though cut off by the slamming of a door. I hustled Logash to his feet and moved behind Jürgen as he aimed and fired the Melter. Once again, the powerful weapon did its work, taking down our most immediate assailants, but this time there was to be no reprieve from them teleporting out to lick their wounds. The group had scattered to hunt down the fleeing stormtroopers, and we only got a couple of them. As I looked round for some sign of our erstwhile companions, I saw two of them taken down with Gauss flayer shots, screaming into vapour even as I watched.
Wellard was backed into a corner between two blocky structures the size of chimeras, eyes unfocused, his mind clearly gone, Helgen hanging forgotten from his hand, babbling incoherently. He was still crying out to the Emperor for help, which never came when the leading automaton swung the heavy blade of its polearm-like weapon and took his head off cleanly with a single sweep, spraying itself with a thick coating of his blood. "Come on," I said urgently. "We have to get out of here." Logash was beginning to recover whatever was left of his wits and shook his head slowly.
"What happened?"
he asked. I was beginning to understand that there was no time now for lengthy explanations, and at our last meeting, Amberley had impressed on both Jürgen and myself the paramount importance of not revealing his gift to anyone, so I just grabbed him by the arm to get him moving. "Stay close to Jürgen," I instructed, and we went to ground between a blank-faced metal cabinet about 3 stories high and a loop of conduit which resembled a glowing green intestine. A faint shriek, abruptly cut off, confirmed the loss of the last stormtrooper. With pounding pulses, we stayed put for some time, as Logash had undoubtedly done before, while those ghastly apparitions began what had every appearance of a methodical search for us. To my relief, however, they seemed to become mildly disorientated every time they approached our hiding place, veering off before they had come within a handful of meters of us, a deliverance I could only attribute to Jürgen's peculiar qualities.
1. Perhaps correctly, the aura of terror projected by Necron pariahs appears to be at least partly a psychic phenomenon, so it's quite reasonable to assume that a blank would repel them and mask the effect. However, since no other record exists of a blank coming into such close proximity to a group of pariahs, and they're far too rare and valuable to risk in deliberately testing their hypothesis, it must remain conjectural.
At length, when everything seemed quiet again, I decided it was time to move. The evacuation must be well underway by now, and I meant to be on a shuttle and safe aboard the Pure of Heart before anything else had a chance to go wrong.
"What about the portal, sir?"
Jürgen wondered aloud. I shrugged. "Nothing we can do about it now." Which was actually true, as the stormtroopers had been carrying the melter charges, which were the only things which might have stood some chance of destroying it, and they'd been vaporized along with the soldiers. "We'll just have to call in the Navy after all. Tough luck on the galaxy, of course, but it's a big place, and even a Necron army couldn't put that big a dent in it," I hoped. So, we made our cautious way back to the tunnel we'd come in by, scurrying from cover to cover as we had done before, and freezing into immobility at every sign of movement. To my immense relief, we encountered no more of those terrible apparitions, catching sight of the more common warriors only at a distance. The aperture left by the ambles was unguarded to my delighted surprise, and I regained the sanctuary of the ice tunnels with a lightness of spirit which was almost intoxicating. It was too good to last, of course, and inevitably, it didn't.